Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. And I'm laughing already tonight because I have one of my closest friends in the field in which I work, and in general as a good friend. She is so smart. I'm going to tell you a whole lot about her. But if you're just tuning in, we're live on 95.9 and 106.9 FM. If it's Monday night at 6 o'clock on the Treasure Coast, 106.9 FM. We're on Long Island at 103.9 FM or an iHeartRadio. If you're picking us up there, we're glad that you're with us. Of course, it is later, and you're not hearing us live, but we appreciate it. My guest tonight, she's an incredibly busy lady. She and I have both scheduled and rescheduled tonight's appearance more times than I care to tell you about. But Dr. Elaine Rotenberg is here, and we're going to talk about your mental health. So you don't want to hear about your mental health? Trust me, you do. And tonight's show will help you or the people that you love live their best life possible. I promise you, this show will teach you so much tonight that you'll want more when it's over. This is really critical, particularly if you yourself are aging or if you have aging parents. Before I get to Dr. Rotenberg, let me just tell you a little bit about a couple of things. We are doing a three-week series at Ibis Country Club. We're going to do brain health. We're going to be talking about nutrition, and we're talking about whether it's Alzheimer's and dementia, followed the last week with Dr. David Watson, who's going to talk about the state of research and the development of new drugs. That's at Ibis, and that's going to start the week after next. And for more information, call Ibis Country Club and find out about that. Also, if you're going to be in Wellington tomorrow, I'm going to be speaking at the Wellington Senior Center talking about whether this is Alzheimer's or normal aging. I'm also going to be doing that at Abbey Del Rey on Thursday. And in between, I get to do it at JCC in Boynton Beach, the same presentation. And then we're going to be doing our support group at Ruth Rails Jewish Family Services later in the week. There's a lot of opportunity to get to hear us live if you have some interest. And if you do, just give us a shout, and we will be happy to tell you how you can find us and get to wherever we're going to be. I also want to tell you about Alpert Jewish Family and Children's Service Aging Mastery Program. It's a 10-week program. It begins at the JCC in Boynton Beach on February 7th. It's going to be an exciting program brought to you by 8 or 10 different proctors, if you will. It's participatory. There's a lot of people already signed up, but there is still room for you. If you have interest, call JCC in Boynton Beach and see about the Aging Mastery Program. But I don't want to waste any time because I have so much to talk to my guest about. So let me tell you a little bit more about Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. She has been the clinical director of the Alpert Jewish Family and Children's Service and the Levin Jewish Residential and Family Service for almost 25 years. Dr. Rotenberg received her BA degree in psychology and education from Brandeis University and then went on to receive both her master's and doctoral degrees in psychology from the University of Denver. Dr. Rotenberg completed her pre-doctoral fellowship in the psychiatry department of Yale University. Dr. Rotenberg provides clinical oversight and establishes standards of best practice for more than two dozen programs of AJFCS and LJRFS. She coordinates the ongoing Performance Quality Improvement Program of Alpert Jewish Family and Children's Service and is a national peer reviewer for the Council on Accreditation. Dr. Rotenberg is a much-requested speaker, having presented both locally and nationally on a variety of topics, and is regularly involved in outreach and interagency collaborative community initiatives. And I will finish by saying you are in for a treat tonight.
Thank you, Scott.
Happy to be here. Dr. Rotenberg, how are you?
Scott, I am great. Good to see you.
Let's start at the beginning. Mental health is a serious problem, particularly in the senior population, and no one will ever discuss it. Why is there such a stigma?
Well, first of all, here we go. First of all, I want to respond to your question because you said that mental health is such a problem. And so I want to, if you don't mind, kind of start with some definitions, which I think kind of add to the stigma, right?
Right.
So mental health isn't a problem. We all want it. We all want to be mentally healthy.
Right.
Mental health is no more of a problem than physical health is a problem. Okay?
Okay.
So let's start there in terms of where some of the stigma comes from. You know, it comes from all of us being many of us by history who we grew up in the generation where we wouldn't talk about things like cancer.
Right.
And we wouldn't say those scary words. I'm pretty convinced we don't like the word mental.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk about it. Mental health is not a problem. Mental health is something that we all want, and we all want a lot of it. And what mental health is really being able to cope with day-to-day issues that come our way. We want to be able to function. We want to be able to work, play, and love. We want to be able to interact with people. We want to do that in our world. Mental health. There's something different that's called mental illness.
Right.
And that's the thing that we mush up together with this mental health. And everybody says things like, it's a mental health. I have a mental health problem. Well, you probably don't. You know, you probably are struggling with something in your life right now. Should we talk about it? That doesn't necessarily mean you have a mental illness. And I want to make that distinction for our listeners.
So that's really interesting. But does that mean that mental health means different things to different people, or mental illness can be different things to different? I mean, some people are naturally nasty, right? I mean, we've all met that. We were joking about something before the show, right? There are people who are never happy. That doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't mentally healthy or that they have a mental illness. They're just not
right.
Not by nature happy people. On the other hand, there are people who see through rose-colored glasses and are happy all the time.
And so none of those things are mental illness.
Right.
Which is probably what we need to talk about.
Okay.
People in general, we all have different styles. We have ways of coping. We have ways we've learned how to be in the world. We have our own personality. You know, there are people that are, you call them nasty people.
Right.
You know, there are people that are demanding. There are people that are fearful all the time. Those things are part of our personality, part of how we learned to be in the world, things that we learned from our family, things, all kinds of things. What I'm talking about is that one out of four of us, some will say one out of five of us, has a diagnosable mental illness, has something that is an illness just like you would have a healthy heart, but if you become ill, you may have heart disease. Okay.
Right.
It's the same thing with our organ that's the brain, okay, which is what deals with mental illness, okay? We have things that can go wrong and we can become ill. And if we become mentally ill, we can develop an illness that's called clinical depression. We can develop an illness that's called bipolar disorder. We can come up with develop an illness that's called an anxiety disorder. We could have there's a whole diagnostic manual that will give you the names of these illnesses. The most important thing, or one of the most important things, is to understand that mental illness is treatable. And if you don't talk about it because you think that it's an embarrassment, you're not going to go for treatment. And mental illnesses are, percentage-wise, dollars for dollars, more treatable than many of our, what you would call, traditional physical illnesses.
Diabetes, heart disease,
correct.
Cancer, exactly.
So somebody, right. So if you are receiving a successful treatment for a clinical depression, there is a success rate of 70 to 80%. Heart disease, there's a success rate of about 40 to 50%, okay? Cardiovascular disease, 60%. Asthma, diabetes, 70 to 80%. when you talk about things like depression, bipolar disorder, you're getting up there in 70-80% of effective treatments, but that's only going to be if somebody's going to go and get help.
So do people not go and get help because they won't get diagnosed, they won't acknowledge that they have a problem, or they don't know that they have a problem, think this is just normal? Why aren't more people seeking out the help that you just said is so available and so effective? It seems to me, if I can fix it, why don't I get it fixed, right?
Well, that's a big statement. I mean, if it's, you know, because there's a lot of different reasons, and a lot of it depends on your age group.
Right.
Oftentimes, we don't get help with mental health concerns because we're really good at telling ourselves and telling our friends and our loved ones that things aren't really so bad.
Yeah,
and
we're
we should just buck up and handle it.
Right.
Right. And so it becomes a sign of weakness if we are really struggling with something, if we go and ask for help.
Is that generational?
I think a big piece of it is generational. Right. You know, we see that. But because also the other part, which, you know, you may want to talk about a little bit here, is that when you talk about aging issues, there are more reasons than not to imagine that somebody would be sad about something.
Right.
I mean, there really are a lot of reasons.
I told you that I had dinner with my very best friend this week, with his mom, who's 94 years old, and she's had a very hard year. She's 94, which in and of itself presents certain challenges for sure. She lives in a lovely place. She's got lots of friends. She plays bridge. She has different friends at each table, you know, for dinner every night of the week. But she lost a daughter. She lost a grandson. She lost her very best friend. She's kind of the last one of her real friends left. She has lots of reasons to be depressed.
She has lots of reasons to have experienced loss and be acutely sad.
Right.
And to experience bereavement and to experience loss. Now, she will also probably say, and her friends and family will say, that she's really depressed. It's still not necessarily clear whether or not she has a clinical depression or not. We use the word depression a lot.
We do.
Okay?
There's no question.
And so that's often the difference between getting treatment and not, because you would think, of course she's feeling this way. She's lost all these things in her life. Okay? However, there are very clear symptoms that go along with a clinical depression. It's something that is going to last for many, many weeks. It's going to be loss of appetite. It's going to be loss of energy. It's going to be crying. It's going to be not enjoying things. It's going to be not being able to make decisions. It's going to be things that last for several weeks. It's not going to be a transient thing that's going to happen. And it's going to be something that, if it sticks around for a while, it's probably worth, regardless of how old you are, getting somebody to assess that, because you could actually wind up feeling better with the appropriate treatment.
So it's beyond melancholy.
It's beyond melancholy.
Melancholy, right?
It's beyond melancholy.
Right. And that is just one of depression. And you're right. You know, that when you said that, I throw that word around indiscriminately. I really do. You know, with my clientele, I talk about, you know, what do you expect? They're depressed. Of course they're depressed. If I'm there, they're not well. Right. So I think that that's naturally.
No,
depressed,
no. Okay. So here's.
But I'm wrong.
Well, here's the thing. If you're there.
Right.
Okay. I'll give you a reframe on this. If you're there, they need help functioning.
Right.
Okay. What's interestingly enough is, if you get somebody the right help and the right support, they could very easily become less depressed, and maybe it could avert it turning into a clinical depression.
And I always say, and I use this expression all the time to everybody, and I've said it thousands of times, getting help is not the beginning of the end of your independence. It's the exact opposite. It's the beginning of the restoration of your independence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what you're talking about. So you said some signs about depression. There are other mental illnesses as well. But Where do you go for diagnosis? Who do you go to? And then again, I will come back to the original question is, we don't have any problem going to a cardiologist, but boy, do we have problem going to a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Right. So let's use, we had this conversation the other day, and I think it's really important to think about that, right? Which is, if you are somebody that is suddenly, you know, you can't breathe, you're having chest pains, you go to the, you know, ER, whatever happens, you're going to go to find a cardiologist, right? And you probably are not going to go to your primary doc to have him treat your blocked artery. You're probably going to find that specialist, okay? For whatever reason, and people would never think of doing something different than that. You would go and you even ask people, do you have a cardiologist? You know, it's like common language, right? We don't do that with mental illness, and there are specialists for that. And most older adults tend to go to their internist, their general doc, for their mental health issues as well. If you want to go to a specialist for a mental illness, you would be going for a diagnosis to a psychiatrist for medication, or to a psychologist, or to a social worker. You would be going to a therapist to talk to, somebody that specializes in assessing what's going on with the person psychiatrically. That's what you would be doing.
But because nobody talks about it, finding them becomes a challenge, right? Who's the good ones? And of course, we're going to talk about Alpert, so we know that you and your program are great at it. But this is not something you go to your friend and say, you know, I'm feeling a little depressed. What psychiatrist do you use?
Well, but you see, that's the thing, right? It's like that's the world we don't live in.
Right.
And that's the world. That's what I believe is beginning to change. And I'm happy to talk to you about that because things have really changed.
And I know that they are changing. We have so much more to talk about. If you're just tuning in, I'm here tonight with Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. Dr. Rotenberg is the clinical director of Alpert Jewish Family and Children's Service. She has been with them for 25 years. She does some amazing things. I can't even begin to tell you everything she does. Not only that, but she has an educational background, which I can only envy, since I went to school for two terms, Eisenhower's and Nixon's. But we're talking about mental illness versus mental health. We have so much more to talk about. We're going to talk about a concept called mental health first aid, which is something you need to stay tuned for because that's really amazing. But if you're listening live on 95.9 FM or 106.9 on Monday night and you have questions for Dr. Rotenberg, call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Eldercare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Eldercare 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make ElderCare 360 part of your team. ElderCare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, caregiver stress is a real condition and it's becoming an epidemic.
That's right, Mike. Chronic diseases like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, cancer, among others, affect more than just the person with the diagnosis. They affect the entire family, oftentimes putting added stress on the primary family caregiver. In fact, 64% of family caregivers who do not seek outside help will predecease their loved one living with Alzheimer's disease. Even just a few hours of respite care a week can give someone a much-needed break so that they can be the best caregiver they can be. Whether it's time to schedule a hair appointment, a card game, an exercise class, or lunch with friends. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom. We're talking about mental health versus mental illness tonight. I'm here with Dr. Elaine Rotenberg from Alpatrice Family and Children's Service. She is the clinical director, and she is an expert in exactly what we are talking about tonight. It's really a fascinating conversation because it's not a topic that anybody really ever talks about. Nobody ever sits down at the Mahjong table and says, hey, I'm feeling depressed today. Nobody ever sits down and says, you know, who's your favorite psychiatrist? These are really important issues. Yet, nonetheless, there are a couple of mental illnesses out there that can be really helped with proper care and attention. The problem is you don't want to self-diagnose. That's a real issue. But you don't know where to turn, and you don't know whether what you're experiencing or feeling is temporary or permanent, or whether it's symptomatic or just kind of a bad day. So, Dr. Rotenberg, help us understand what we should think about or what we should be thinking about that would bring us to go seek out help. And then where would you go to get help? I know you're fearful about talking about specific symptoms because we don't want people to listen in and go, oh my God, I'm depressed.
Right. I don't want to do that.
Right.
But what I do want to say is that, what people need to look at, and you know, I tend to believe that people really genuinely are more knowledgeable about themselves than they even give themselves credit for.
Right.
Okay. So in other words, people kind of know if they're not coping.
Okay.
And if you're not coping with a stress in your life for a day or a couple days or 3 days or 4 days or a week or whatever, okay, that happens to all of us. If you want to go under the covers, and we've all had those days or weeks or an entire weekend that you slept all weekend because you didn't want to face anything. Okay, we all have those. If that goes on for a long period of time, we're talking a long period of time, days, and you're knowing that you are not able to function. And what I mean by functioning is, functioning means that you can participate in your life. You can communicate with people. You can continue to enjoy things. You can, you know, go to work. You can, if you're somebody that still works, you can distract yourself from that feeling. Okay. It has a whole lot to do with how we're coping and how we're functioning on a day to day and the duration and the intensity in which we're feeling lousy, much like you would with any kind of other illness, right? If you have a cold, you might just tough it out.
Right.
Okay?
We're both doing tonight.
Like we're both doing tonight. But if you have a cold and you're toughing it out, but what's that point when you think, I got to really go to the doctor. I think I might need the antibiotic.
Right.
Okay? It's not that far different. What's different is that we don't look at that. because we just assume we're supposed to keep toughing it out and toughing it out. And of course, there's all this bad stuff in my life, so of course I feel this way. And we forget about the fact that our body, like physiologically, is reacting in ways that we're not eating, we're not, it's becoming a physically manifested yuckiness, okay?
So then it does affect us physically.
Yuckiness is a clinical word.
Right.
Anyway. Yes.
It can affect us physically.
Absolutely.
It's not just mental. It can really, it is a mental illness that can affect us physically.
The more and more people are understanding about mental illness, it's related to our brain, okay? And our brain is part of our body,
right?
Our brain is part of our body. And part of why medications can be helpful, they wouldn't be helpful if there weren't parts of this that were not chemical and biological and, you know, things like that, in addition to things like talk therapy being helpful for people.
So we said earlier, just for a sentence or so, we said that this was generational. I guess better said is it affects different generations differently, mental illness?
No. I think people's willingness to talk about mental illness, I think the issues around stigma are generational. I think that our younger generations today are much more comfortable talking about who their therapist is and do you know a good therapist than my mother or your mother would have been.
Well, and that's absolutely true. You think that that awareness about mental illness had a specific turning point. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I do a little bit. I think that we are in a very exciting time, as call it what you will, okay?
Right.
But we are in a very exciting time in the world of mental health and mental illness and awareness. And unfortunately, the tragedy that happened at Sandy Hook, which was 5 years ago, the shooting at Sandy Hook with the elementary
kids,
school,
right?
That was a significant turning point that we faced as a country, because at that moment in time, part of what happened was that we couldn't, there were a lot of things as a country we couldn't agree on around that. And there was a lot of back and forth, debate over gun control, and blah, blah,
doesn't
blah.
Doesn't matter which side you're
doesn't
on.
Doesn't matter. It was
everybody
not a good picture.
Right,
but what
right.
really wound up being a unifying discussion at that time was that we need to be more aware of what's happening with mental illness. And that turning point, for those of us who have been in the field forever, this last 5-8 years has been just a remarkable, like the jig is up, the curtain is open, like let us talk about this. Now, the treatment isn't necessarily all in place, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But in step one is the issue of drawing back the curtain and saying 1 out of 4 adults, like look around your dinner table, is experiencing a mental illness. That 50% of all adult mental illness can be diagnosed before the age of 14. Think about that. 50% of all adult mental illness can be diagnosed before the age of 14, yet only a third of those get appropriate treatment.
So let me
just finish for a second. So what happened is that starting with the last 5-6 years or so, okay, we have really turned up the volume on having this discussion. And it's taken a lot of different forms. On a federal level, the SAMHSA, which is Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, they've been doing all kinds of different educational and awareness and grant funding opportunities. What came into the United States in 2008 is something called Mental Health First Aid. Do we have a few minutes for me to tell you about it?
No. Why don't we hold that,
okay,
and then we'll go right to that when we come back,
because
we've got pretty close. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, and so is my mom. And if your mom is getting older, tonight's show could be really, really important for you, and how you can help her, how this affects the caregiver is really important. And we're going to talk about memory. We're going to talk about mental health first aid. We're going to talk about caregiving. We have so much more to talk about with my guest, one of my closest friends, certainly in the industry, but even beyond that, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. She is here tonight. She is the clinical director of Alpha Jewish Family and Children's Service. And there is no one, I sincerely mean that, there is no one more knowledgeable about this subject than Dr. Rotenberg. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. If you have any questions for Dr. Rotenberg, you can call us at 1-877-960-9960. 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it, and we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a cartographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were stationed might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Scott Greenberg. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom. Here tonight with Dr. Elaine Rotenberg from Alpha Jewish Family and Children's Service. She is the clinical director of that organization, and Levin Residential Family Service, which is equally important. We're not going to talk much about either of the agencies tonight because we have talked about them both before, but she has headed up the clinical efforts at Alpert for nearly 25 years. We're talking about mental health versus mental illness. And if you've been listening all this time, we broke right when we were about to talk about a program that was introduced here roughly 2008 called Mental Health First Aid. So,
right.
Why don't we go there? Yep. Tell us what that is.
Okay. So, Mental Health First Aid is an international program that is an evidence-based program. It started in Australia in 2000, came to the United States in 2008. The idea is much like first aid and CPR, to teach ordinary citizens how to recognize what a mental illness is and how to respond to a potential mental health crisis. It literally teaches ordinary citizens a five-step response for how to approach somebody that they think may be in trouble, how to ask somebody about suicide, how to ask somebody whether or not, you know, they are in emotional distress, and to get them to the help that they need. So I'm really proud of the fact that since 2008 in the United States, there have been about 1 million people trained in mental health first aid. And 2.5 years ago, Jewish Family Service started a countywide coalition. There were just a few individual trainers here, but there was no coordinated effort to teach mental health first aid. And we actually began and have a county coordinator that coordinates 16 different agencies, including the school district of Palm Beach County. We have 32 nationally certified mental health first aid instructors. And in the last 2.5 years, we've trained almost 3,800 people in our county about mental health first aid. They've taken this 8-hour course and become certified in really understanding what a mental illness is and a substance use issue. So it's really for mental illness and substance use.
So said, I have about 10 questions just entered my head with that. But one, just to reiterate what you're saying, even Palm Beach County Fire Rescue brought on their first social worker in the last few years to kind of deal with
mental health
first aid.
Well, the fact that the local, our police departments here, they have a 40-hour course, but what they've done, the sheriff's office determined that for everybody who doesn't take the 40-hour course, they've signed them all up to take mental health first aid, and we coordinate all of that. And it's just an exciting initiative for our county.
The other thing you mentioned, and we didn't really talk about it, but it's there, is how important to mental health first aid is substance abuse. How important to mental health first aid are outside influences that are not natural brain disease as opposed to manufactured brain disease.
Well, here's the thing, okay? That's another piece, is that part of mental health first aid is teaching that substance use is also a disease, and it does affect our brain. And so that's a whole other show.
Right.
It's really important that to understand that the language in our country is also changing in terms of substance use. And so there's more recognition now that, and you notice I'm referring to it as substance use disorder, not substance abuse. And that's been a change as well, to acknowledge the fact that it is also a brain disease. There are changes in the brain that occur with substance use. And also, 50% of people that abuse and that have a substance use disorder also have a co-occurring mental illness. And so we're really trying to have some of the stigma and the education and the awareness be for both mental illness and substance use, and not just shun people who are struggling with substances. And that's important for our older adults, too,
sure,
because
right.
they're, you know, a whole other, you know, conversation would be about opioids and what's happening with pain medicine and all of that stuff. So,
no, I mean, I have done shows on abuse amongst the elderly, prescription medications, alcohol abuse, street drugs. I mean, it's a serious problem in the senior citizens. It really is. But your perspective on this is that it's a chicken and an egg as to which comes first. It could be a mental illness that's driving people towards that, or it could be.
Well, there are two separate things that can be co-occurring.
Right.
And that's what's really important to understand, is that you don't have to wait till, you can't ignore the fact that somebody who is struggling with substances may also have a clinical depression that needs treatment.
You know, what's interesting, the more I listen to you, and I actually think of myself as being probably more educated on this than the average person, I realize I really don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I'm just wondering that, you know, that's got to be kind of universal, right? I think, you know, I'm not the exception here. I'm the rule. Most of us don't have any idea what we're talking about.
If you take a mental health first aid class, have you taken the class
I
yet?
Have not. Everybody else in our place has, but
okay.
I haven't.
What's cool about...
I mean, the girls. For those who don't know, the girls being my daughters, who Elaine knows well.
Right.
I mean, Dr. Rotenberg knows well.
Here's the thing. If you take a mental health first aid class, one of the things, the very first thing they talk about is all the language that we don't know.
Right.
You know, and it really forces people to use all those words like, you know, he's crazy and what do you call people that, and, you know, just these things that we've been saying that certainly don't make it sound like it's an illness.
So let's talk about caregivers, because caregivers is an issue, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there's tremendous risks about, I mean, this is not... This is another one of those examples. I talk about this all the time, that mental illness is a family disease, right? It affects everybody.
So let me talk about caregiving. And actually, I really do appreciate that you acknowledge the mental health services that we have at Jewish Family Service, because not just in terms of individual counseling, but psychiatry as well, but also support groups for caregivers and for people who have survived a suicide of somebody in their family, or a caregiver support group, or parents. One of our support groups that is so huge right now is parents who have lost an adult child.
Wow.
And that's just like a whole different experience in terms of struggling with a mental illness or an issue. And related to caregiving, You know, Rosalind Carter said there are only four kinds of people in the world. Those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need caregivers. And that's pretty true, right? If you think about it. And in terms of caregiving, we know that 80% of caregiving happens with a family member. And we also know that of spouses who are caregivers, I told you that one out of five people has a clinical depression. People who are caregivers for a spouse are 6 times as likely to become depressed.
Right.
It's just the numbers are huge. And that population is truly at risk in terms of caregiving.
That's so important to get across. I do a couple of support groups myself, more typically Alzheimer's and dementia related than anything that you would do in terms of mental health. But there isn't a session goes by that somebody doesn't start to cry about something that's going out there.
Can we talk about dementia for a second?
Sure.
Because you just made me think about that. I think it's an important point is a lot of times older adults particularly will just kind of sweep their mental health symptoms, their mental illness symptoms under the table, under the rug, because, as you asked me before, they're thinking this is just kind of a natural part of aging. And one of the things that's important to realize is that as somebody gets older, we sometimes confuse dementia with depression. And any of us who has been overwhelmed with a stressor in our life, you might recognize that sometimes your concentration is off. Maybe you're a little more forgetful. Maybe you can't make decisions as well. Okay? Those symptoms are also symptoms that people talk about when they talk about memory problems.
Right.
Okay? So part of what's important, another reason why it's important to discern whether somebody may be experiencing a clinical depression, is if somebody gets appropriate treatment,
right,
amazingly, their memory issues may look better.
That's amazing. That's amazing. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Here with one of the smartest guests I've ever had, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. She is the clinical director of Alpert Jewish Family and Children's Service. We're going to be talking about resilience when we come back. We're going to talk about how you can reach her. We're going to talk about how you can get involved, where you can go to for help. We're going to talk about suicide. We have a lot to cover yet in the show. So please, if you have any questions for Dr. Rotenberg, call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, at Comfort Care, you're an agency, not a nurse registry, right?
Yes, Mike. When looking at home care in South Florida, there are two types of companies, and on the front, we look very much the same. We're an agency, which means all of our caregivers are our employees. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. We pay the professional liability insurance, we pay the workers' comp insurance, the overtime, and we pay the employment taxes. In other words, we are the true employer. When working with a nurse registry, the client is the employer, and that matters. Another big difference is the ability to train. Agencies are allowed to train, and we do. We conduct both field training and in-home training. A nurse registry's caregivers are deemed experts in their field and therefore are not allowed to be trained by the registry over and above what the state requires. We also have a very rigorous hiring process. The caregiver pool in South Florida is huge, and we strive to hire the top 20%. We do that in a few ways, including testing, interviews, background checks over and above what the state requires, and passing the family test. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Here tonight with Dr. Elaine Rotenberg from Albert Jewish Family and Children's Services. Dr. Rotenberg is the clinical director. She's been there for 25 years. She knows her stuff. We're talking about mental health versus mental illness. We have so much to talk about in so little time, but we're still going to try to get as much of in as we can. Before the break, we were talking about dementia mirroring some of the symptoms, and that if you get properly diagnosed, it's amazing that what you thought was dementia can in fact go away. So I guess we want to move into resilience. We want to move into 10 ways to build resilience. Can we make a bridge there, or is it not necessary to make a bridge to
go for? We can make a bridge. Okay. You want a bridge? We'll make a bridge.
Have I got a bridge for you?
Have I got a bridge for you? There is a bridge there because, you know, the question is often, I often think about if two people have the same, like, loss in their life or the same difficult thing happen. Do you ever wonder that, like, one person seems to cope well with it and the other person doesn't cope as well?
Right.
Like, what is that? Like, how do we, what's the answer to all of this? So a couple of things that I think are important to say. Number one, there are lots and lots of reasons why as we get older, we should feel sad and hopeless. However, you do not need to become clinically depressed. It's not a natural part of aging. And there are things we can do to become more resilient. And our resilience, what that means is how it's not making bad things not happen. It's all about how we react to the bad things
right.
that happen.
Right.
Because there's always, I can tell you, Scott, as sure as I'm sitting here, that no one is going to escape loss and heartache.
Right.
It's just not happening.
Right.
Okay, and you know
that's why I joke. I said nobody's getting out of here alive.
That's the bad news, right? But the good news is that there are different things that we ourselves can do and listen for in our loved ones to help them do. And if you'd like, I'll tell you a few of them.
Sure.
The first thing, which is probably most important, is to make connections. When we're young, we start our life, and I use the metaphor of remember Tinker Toys?
Sure.
I talk about the tan Tinker Toy, the one that's got the little holes around the side, and then you put the little sticks in it, okay? And you build things with
right.
it, okay? And when we're little, it's all about adding connections. You know, we add our best friend, we add play dates, and we add preschool, and we add. And then as we get older, we take the sticks out. Our kids move away. We retire. This friend died. That one died. We
That's a
lose.
Great analogy. I'm going to steal that.
You can steal it. And I actually love that analogy because you can see it visually, right, too. And we lose our connections. It's just a natural part of aging. So building our resilience is really as simple as adding in connections. You know, it can, and I say when I talk to seniors, I'll say, you know, you add in a conversation with somebody, add in a shared meal with somebody, add in a bingo game. You're adding connections. So that's one thing to build resilience. Another thing is to avoid seeing crises as insurmountable. Believe it or not, if you listen to people, you can hear the one that goes, oh, God, this is it. You know, the minute you hear that, I call that the Eeyore symptom. Okay. It's like, right, that's it. This is the worst. What is it that happened? You know, my order didn't come from Amazon today. Oh, my. Okay. So that's number two. Number three, accept that change is a part of living. It's going to happen. Number four, move towards your goals. If you don't have any goals, make some. You are never too old to establish a goal. A goal can be getting from your house from your kitchen to your living room. A goal can be getting from your living room to your neighbor's house. Okay. Take decisive actions is another one. Look for opportunities for self-discovery. Tune into this radio show. That's an opportunity for self-discovery. Right. You know, tell a friend. If you're sitting here listening on the air right now, tell a friend of yours next week, hey, let's tune in at 6 o'clock. And this is it 6 o'clock, right? But that's, you know, an opportunity for self-discovery. Nurture a positive view of yourself is another one. How much do we tell ourselves bad things about ourselves? By the way, every time we say something negative to ourselves, it actually changes your physiology. And that is what makes us have some of these symptoms related to clinical depression and anxiety. It's what we tell ourselves. It like kind of releases different chemicals. Keep things in perspective. Okay. That is a huge one. Okay. Maintain a hopeful outlook. Very hard to do. Okay. Very easier for people when bad things happen to not find a moment to appreciate something. Right. That is huge. And then the other one is the last one, which is so significant, is to take care of yourself.
Right.
And that's a huge statement, but that can happen in any number of ways, mentally, physically, spiritually. You know, find a friend, find a conversation to have with somebody.
I talk all the time about volunteering. If you don't know where to turn, volunteer. Even if you can't leave your house, you can volunteer.
You
but
can
you
volunteer.
Can volunteer. There's nothing you can do if you want to do it. I mean, there are things you can't physically do,
right,
but if you want to volunteer, if you find a purpose, I write about it in the book. Anyway, if you're just tuned in, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. We have had an unbelievably important show tonight. We're talking about mental health versus mental illness with Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. If you're listening on 95.9 or 106.9 FM, you've been listening live, unless it's Sunday morning, because then we're rebroadcasting again on Sunday morning. But if you're in New York listening on 103.9 Long Island's Talk Radio, we're glad that you're with us. We hope you had a great day. And we hope that you have enjoyed the show. If you missed the beginning of the show and wish you hadn't, there is good news. We podcast. We'll be up and running on iTunes podcast late tonight, tomorrow morning. All you have to do is search OMG, I'm Getting, and up we will pop. You can listen to this show or any of the others that we have done. Of course, we also will put it on our website, palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com. Comfort Care, ComfortCare. You want to put a T in there? I know you do. Don't do that. All right? Comfort Care. No matter where you are, if you have a radio or you don't have a radio, if you're in your car or not, you always have your smartphone with you. And that's good because there's a radio. There's an app called TuneIn Radio where you can find us. Every week, wherever you are, we can be with you. Of course, we simulcast on www.TrueOldiesFlorida or TrueOldiesFLA.com. TrueOldiesFLA. We do it locally, nationally, and internationally. So you can listen to us wherever you are. You never have to miss us. Next week, I'm going to be talking about MS. We don't talk about MS a lot. There is great progress being made in the treatment of multiple sclerosis. For those of you who listen to me regularly, I am really struggling tonight. I have a cold, but we're marching through. But Nicole Mercado will be here from the MS Society. They have a lot of programs coming up, lots of ways for you to get involved. But we're going to be talking about the disease and the treatments that are out there, of which there are many, and they are having great progress. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be talking about a new community that's about to open up in the Lake Worth area. It's a unique community. It's called The Landings, and we're going to be talking about that. It's going to have something different. They have a whole kind of unique approach to senior living, and I can't wait to talk about it and to share that with you. It's going to be very, very exciting. But I still have a minute or two or three with my guest tonight, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg. Dr. Rotenberg, if people think they might need help, if people aren't sure that they do, if they're embarrassed to call, they can call AJFC.
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked me that, because here's the thing. You don't have to know what's wrong.
Right.
You just have to know that something's not quite feeling right.
Right.
And we, with one telephone call, we use master's level folks on the telephone who will talk to you on the phone and help you figure out whether there's something we can do to help you, whether or not there's something somebody else in the community can do, whether there's something to be concerned about. You don't have to know the answers. The biggest thing is just being willing to make a phone call.
Right.
That is the hugest thing.
And that phone number would be?
Is 561-684-1991.
And there's also a website,
which is www.jfcsonline.com.
Right. And I can tell you from my experience, having worked so closely with AJFCS over the years, that the work that they do is quite remarkable. And it is remarkable because of the people that work there. They really are the most dedicated and devoted group of people I've ever encountered. I can tell you that for sure. So I think, you know, again, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I think the most important thing, the thing we wanted to leave everybody with at the end of the night, was that it is not natural. Mental illness is not natural. You don't have to live with it.
You do not have to become mentally ill.
Right.
You know, that sadness isn't the same as depression. That fear isn't the same as a clinical anxiety. You don't have to. When bad things happen in your life, it doesn't mean you're inevitably going to become mentally ill. And earlier rather than later, to talk to somebody if you're not feeling right, that things that you're feeling bad about, that you're not functioning well, that it's going on for just too long, there's no shame in telling somebody that you think you need to talk to somebody to figure it out. Go find the specialist. You would do it with any other organ in your body.
So we, again, really don't have a whole host of time left, but I just thought about this. If you're an adult child coming down from out of town or coming to visit mom or dad, and you start to see signs that you're not sure of that might be mental illness, how do you intervene? Can you intervene? Should you intervene? And who do you intervene with?
I think that is that's a whole other show.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean,
is.
It really is, because, right, you know, we certainly don't want to leave your audience thinking that all the adult children should come down and diagnose their parents as having a mental illness. We certainly don't want to do that, because so – but that is an important conversation in terms of figuring out when you're the adult
child. Wives,
on
the other hand, can do that all
the time. They can do that all the time. But quite frankly, if you're the adult child coming down, the first thing I would say for you to do, more than consider labeling your parents, is to listen to your parents.
Right, right. It's really, listening is a lost art, isn't it?
Lost art, way different than hearing.
Yeah. So you've been a wonderful guest. I'm so excited that you came here tonight.
It's
I know you
great.
Had a very busy day.
It's and great I know, to be here.
And I know that we
should
have,
do this more.
We should. And I know that we've tried to do this before. I have so much more I could talk to you about, and we will. We have so much
there's
more.
A lot
this
of
is
people,
such an important subject.
There's a lot of people out there, Scott, that are hurting, that probably don't necessarily need to hurt quite as badly as they're hurting.
Right.
With just getting some support.
And at the end of the day, isn't that what it's all about?
That's
if
what
you
it's
would
all
like
about.
To reach Alpha Jewish Family and learn more about this, 561-684-1991. That's 561-684-1991. Their website, www.jfcsonline.com. We will be here next week, as we are every Monday night. Oh, my God, I'm getting older, and so is my mom. Is here every Monday night at 6 o'clock on 95.9 FM. Also on 106.9 on the Treasure Coast, True Oldies. We're glad that you're with us. If you're a regular listener, we thank you. If you are new, please come back. We got lots of interesting stuff, both before and to come, and you won't be sorry. My name is Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. We will see you next week when my guest Nicole Mercado from the MS Society will be here, and that's another show you don't want to miss. Dr. Romberg, thank you again.
Thank
to
you,
all
Scott.
Have a great night.